Welcome to Happily Ever After is just the beginning. Keeping your relationship not just together, but happy, and we mean truly happy, is part art and part science. You've come to the right place. Here's your host, Leslie Dorries.
My position has always been that miserable and marriage should never be used in the same sentence. Unfortunately, for a lot of couples, that seems to be the reality. So let me be clear. Every relationship is going to have its ups and downs. There are times when things will be more challenging than others. That is perfectly normal. But what shouldn't be normal is being in a relationship where you are consistently unhappy. Nor is that even healthy. But that's where many people find themselves. And quite frankly, it's too many people, in my humble opinion. So how do people find themselves in this position? And more importantly, do things have to stay that way? Is it a case of remain being unhappy or ending the relationship? These are all really good questions, and to help find the answers, I'm joined by author and fellow marriage and family therapist, Dr. Darlene Lancer. Dr. Lancer, Darlene, thank you so much for being on the show. I so appreciate your time and tackling what seems to be, I don't want to call it a universal problem, that's not what I mean, but a far too frequent problem.
Oh, well, thank you very much for asking me. It's a pleasure to address your audience.
Yes. So you wrote an article called Do You Feel Trapped in an Unhappy Relationship? Which is like, okay, let's just get right to the point here. You tackle this. You take this on head on. So what are some of the ways that people get caught up in what seems to be a perpetually unhappy or difficult relationship?
Well, one of the things that will lead to that is if a person can't speak up about their needs and wants.
Mm-hmm.
So they're accommodating a lot of times. I would refer to that often as codependency.
Uh-huh.
And then they build up resentments. They think that their partner is selfish. And then they might try to get their way by being passive-aggressive or nagging, criticizing, and that just pushes their partner away more. So they haven't learned to be assertive, and that's a big cause of unhappiness.
Well, and you make some really, really interesting points because I've talked about this before, and you know, people think, well, my partner should just know what I need. If they loved me, you know, the magical thinking, you know, mind reading school of marriage that, you know, my soulmate would just know, I would never have to explain what it is that I want. And then when I don't get it, I get really upset about it. And quite frequently, then I blast my partner, which of course doesn't help either. So I love this idea of learning to be assertive, and I love it because you're not saying, you know, and so what is the difference between being assertive and what some people would call aggressive?
Oh, yeah. You know, when people are not assertive, and most of us don't learn that in our families growing up. Communication is learned in our family of origin.
Mm-hmm.
And often if we've grown up in a dysfunctional family, either both parents are aggressive or one is aggressive and the other is passive. So being aggressive is being demanding.
Mm-hmm.
And ordering. There's a whole, I have a lot of articles on abuse, but just denying the other person's reality, making unilateral, being controlling.
Mm-hmm.
That's another form of having power over someone. It's not necessarily being aggressive, but you could put that in that category.
Right.
And so to accommodate and keep the peace, a lot of partners learn to be the opposite. Maybe they
mm-hmm.
saw one of their parents just please and go along. And so that's being passive and not speaking up. That's a big reason people feel trapped. And when they start setting boundaries, it could even lead to people having affairs because they can't speak up for what they want. So when they start doing that, the power balance starts to shift and there's less resentment,
mm-hmm.
and they start getting their needs met. I have to laugh on the example you made about mind reading because it happens so often. And then what happens when I coach clients, and this is usually the case with women who
mm-hmm.
tend to be more passive than men in general, and that's there are a lot of reasons I won't go into for that, but coach them to ask for what they want, and even they will do it in a couple sessions, but then when the husband complies, they feel, well, it doesn't count because I had to ask.
Oh, I love that too. And when that happens, what I ask people is like, okay, so your birthday or Christmas is coming up, and you tell people around you what it is you'd like to have, and they give it to you. Do you give it back because they only gave it to you because you wanted it? And that usually stops them in their tracks because they don't think about it that way. It's like, because the other thing I always say is, well, your partner could always choose not to give it to you. So it's kind of like, wait a minute.
Yeah, and the partner, the husband, might feel like he's in a double bind.
Mm.
He doesn't know. I mean, some people, speaking of gifts, some people want just a gesture, an emotional gift,
mm-hmm.
basically, and someone else might want something that's expensive.
Right, and well, so, that comes the whole love languages. That's kind of what the
whole theory is about. Yeah, and your partner's going to give you what's his language. He's not going to understand maybe what's your language. But what I say to the partner who expects mind reading is actually you should be more appreciative because now your partner has gone out of their way from their ordinary, habitual, you know, behavior and thinking to actually meet your needs. And that's something that you should applaud when they go out of their way from their ordinary personality to do something that shows their love for you.
Yeah, I love that. I think that's a really important factor. And I also want to go back to something that you said because I ran into this all the time about people who want to keep the peace, or they don't voice what their needs or wants are because they think it's selfish. And we have all of these real misconceptions about what makes relationships work. And you go back to what you were saying about learning about relationships, learning about communication in our family of origin and setting boundaries. Well, of course, when we're kids, we frequently aren't allowed to set boundaries growing up because our parents basically tell us what to do. And so it's something people don't understand how to do. And in your article, you also made a really interesting observation that this feeling of having no choices stems from unconscious fear. And so, you know, fear to me, I tell people that I think fear is the most powerful emotion that there is. The only thing that can even come close to touching it and counterbalancing it is love, but fear is so powerful. So when you talk about things being driven by unconscious fear, what do you mean, and what's behind it?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that. Well, it's people usually don't speak up because when you talk about keeping the peace,
yeah.
not making waves, they don't want to break the emotional connection. So a lot of times people...
Oh, yeah, there's a fear
that they
if I speak my voice, if I ask for what I want and my partner doesn't like it, my partner is going to go away.
Well, maybe not even leave, but just leave emotionally. Like
mm-hmm.
they'll be mad at me. That might be one thing. You're afraid because you had an angry parent that
mm-hmm.
they'll be angry with you. Maybe your partner is that way. Or that they will just withdraw their love. So it's breaking the emotional connection. They might go sit on their computer and ignore you. I mean, it could be a minor thing. Go talk on their phone where they're
mm-hmm.
emotional, I'm not going to be speaking to you. So that could be very If you've had a lot of emotional abandonment in your childhood, and you're very sensitive to that, mm-hmm. that's the main thing. It's also in parenting that even when you punish a child or correct a child, that you don't withdraw love, that you keep the emotional connection. And people that have been raised by a parent that did that can be more sensitive to that.
Uh-huh.
So that's one of the big fears. And then extrapolate that to, you know, larger is actually leaving or being left. Being mm-hmm. emotionally abandoned and physically abandoned, being on your own. So,
well, and that's a really interesting observation because I did a lot of work when I first started working in the field of domestic violence, and I will still even be with my certain my clients, and they'll actually say to me, well, you know, it's not so bad. He doesn't hit me. And I'm like going, oh, my God, that's your standard. But it is. It's this fear of, you know, there's nothing better out there. I need to put up with this. And then you just end up in what I consider this horrible downward spiral, and eventually something will break the jam.
Right. So people need to have a support system to leave a long-term relationship.
Mm-hmm.
It may not even have to be long-term, maybe just a year or something, because they get attached and because of their emotional needs. And yes, people even in violent relationships will be abused on the average 7 times before they'll leave, and that's
mm-hmm.
because they need that emotional connection. Losing that feels worse than the physical abuse. So you need a support network. Unfortunately, some people, their network would shame them for leaving. If there's a stigma, it's not
yes.
as much now as it used to be, but in some immigrant cultures or some religious
mm-hmm.
you know, groups, there's a big stigma on divorce. And so people feel like they're a failure, and then they bring shame upon themselves. But you need to develop resources with hobbies, friends, be more autonomous. So you're actually, you know, I always say, you want to feel as good outside the relationship as you do in the relationship. The relationship is an added benefit, bonus. It shouldn't be your whole life. Your partner should not give up yourself, your friends, your hobbies, your activities, and ultimately your identity
mm-hmm.
because you're in a relationship. And so
well,
you
and
need
I think
to build
that
up if you don't have it.
Well, and I think that part of that is in the early days of a relationship, when we're in the honeymoon phase, when we're in the in-love phase, we are all about our partner, and we do tend to let some of the other aspects of our lives go by the wayside. And so sometimes, you know, it can be a challenge to do that. But it's also, you know, this whole thing about having a support system. And, you know, one of the things that I'm trying to do, and part of the reason why I do this show, is because we don't talk to each other really about what's going on in our marriages. We put out on Facebook, oh, you know, here are all the happy pictures, and we don't know what's normal. We don't know that every couple has to struggle with how do we, you know, decide the household chores and how do we handle when we have differences of opinions and all of these perfectly normal things that we don't necessarily talk to anybody about. Now, we might get together with our girlfriends or our guy friends and complain, you know, about what my partner did, but it's not really what I consider a healthy discussion. Like, you know, when I had my kids and I was struggling with something, and I would go, how do you potty train them? Or how do you get to, I mean, you'd have these conversations about what's normal, but we don't seem to do that with our marriages or our intimate relationships.
We don't, you mean the communication in the couple is not?
Well, no, I mean,
but
to outside, you know, to get support systems so that, you know, we're having these real conversations about what's going on behind closed doors. Not from a shame perspective or a blame perspective, but just from a sharing of information perspective.
Yeah, it's good to have a group where you do that. And then a lot of times couples won't discuss with their parents things, negative things that are going on because they're ashamed. So what you're talking about is shame. So even if your partner's abusing you and he or she is the one that is really at fault, often the victim will feel transferred shame, even though they're not the one behaving that way.
Right, although frequently their partner's going to be telling them that it is their fault, which...
Well, yeah, you get to something. I write a lot about this, about abuse and how to confront it and self-esteem. And that's a big reason why people feel trapped, because they don't feel like the grass is any greener. They may not feel that they're worthy of respect. Mm-hmm. They may not even... Denial is a big reason people stay. They don't even realize that... they're being abused, or that things, if they were manipulated in their childhood, if they were verbally abused or emotionally abused or controlled, it just feels normal.
Right. Yeah, or if they saw their parents interacting in that way, and then, because of course we know that abuse is multi-generational. So this is Happily Ever After is just the beginning on webtalkradio.net. I'm Leslie Dorries, and I'm talking about how people end up staying in less than great relationships with author and marriage and family therapist, Dr. Darlene Lancer. So if you recognize yourself in today's discussion, I want you to know that you have options. Getting out is one, but making it better is another. And if you would like to know how to do that, I encourage you to contact me today and schedule a free, no obligation, Create Your Happily Ever After strategy session. You can reach me by email at Leslie, L-E-S-L-I, at foundationscoachingnc.com. That's F-O-U-N-D-A-T-I-O-N-S, coaching, N as in Nancy, C as in Charlie.com. Or you can call me at area code 919-924-0463. Again, that's 919-924-0463. And I want to get back to this conversation about getting your relationship on track, getting it better, or getting out if that's what you need to do. And Darlene, you talk about the article, you talk about autonomy, and you mentioned it just a little bit ago about, you know, the importance of autonomy. And so can you define that, and can you also talk about what role it plays the role of lack of autonomy playing in the development of unhappy relationships?
Sure. Well, interesting. It's kind of paradoxical, but both boundaries and autonomy are essential for a healthy, happy relationship. It sounds counterintuitive, but unless you have an independent, secure, separate self, you're going to end up merging and giving yourself over, losing yourself with your partner, and you're going to become more and more unhappy because you're two different people with different personalities, different, to some extent, maybe different values, different histories, different, might even be different races, different cultures, and you have to be able to embrace that. Developing autonomy is the end result of part of the individuation process of becoming a separate adult. Mm-hmm. That means that we trust our own decisions, we trust ourselves, we don't feel lost and empty when we're alone, so we're not clingy, we're not afraid of leaving, we don't feel responsible for other people's feelings and actions. We wouldn't blame ourselves for our partner's bad behavior. So we wouldn't feel so guilty about leaving them and taking care of them emotionally. We would want to also take care of ourselves. You have your own opinions. You can't really negotiate and compromise until you have a separate self, because you're going to... Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And I find that you've made some really interesting points, because I hear all the time, well, I can't say that because my partner will get angry or it will bother them. And my attitude is, now, if you're saying it to hurt them or to make them, I mean, if your sole purpose is only to annoy or do that, but I said, but if you're speaking your truth and they don't like it, and you're, I mean, and how you say it makes a huge difference, but then that's their problem, not yours. But that seems to be this, what keeps so many people caught, because you're not intentionally saying or doing something that annoys somebody, but you're honestly owning who you are and not, because this is one of the things I get people all the time. It's like, well, I don't want to be in a relationship because my partner is going to try to change me. I said, well, one, they can try, but two, that's up to you as to whether or not you do that.
Good point, yeah.
And changing and modifying my behavior because it makes my life with my partner better, not modifying my behavior because I'm afraid that if I don't, they're going to leave. Those are actually, on the surface, they look exactly the same, but the reasons for them are completely different.
Well, yes, and being able to, we talked about speaking up for your needs and wants mm-hmm. and feelings. A lot of people, I mentioned denial, are in denial. If those weren't honored growing up, you may not even know what you're feeling or know what you need, know what mm-hmm. you want. And so being able to speak your truth, that doesn't mean the other person is going to go along with it, but that's a starting place where you can compromise. If you don't even ask for what you want or speak up, then you're going to be really unhappy. So one of my first books that I wrote was How to Speak Your Mind, Become uh-huh. Assertive and Set Limits, and that builds self-esteem. And self-esteem and becoming assertive, they go together. The more you are assertive, even on a job interview, people can evaluate unconsciously. They assess your self-esteem by how you talk, how direct you are,
uh-huh.
How assertive you are. And growing your self-esteem, and I've written a lot about that, also makes you more assertive. In fact, people who are more assertive, studies were done specifically on women, enjoy sex more.
because you have to tell people what it is you feels good or doesn't feel good. And the other, and this is the thing. It's like, I've said this to my husband, and I say it to my clients. It's like, if I don't know that I'm doing something that is bothersome or troublesome, then I don't know, I'm not even given the opportunity to do it differently. Now, somebody could tell me that what I'm doing isn't okay with them, and I could say, well, that's okay, I'm going to do it anyway. But at least I would have that information. But if I don't have that information, I'm going to assume everything's okay.
That's right. And then the other person who's not speaking up is going to build resentments and maybe blow up.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's really counterproductive.
Well, and this is really what happens, and I can't say the word on the air, but I had a friend who called them the FU40s, where women who would do everything that their partners wanted and do everything that their kids wanted, and then once the kids left the house, it was like, okay, now it's my time. And I think Gail Sheehy wrote a book years ago called, oh gosh, I can't remember the name of it, but it was basically about the same thing, where women in their 50s and their 60s were going, I'm done. And it's like, you always should have been part of the equation. There was nobody at me, and a lot of the husbands would be like, I didn't know there was a problem.
Well, husbands do this too, and then they have affairs because
yep.
they feel like they're not getting their needs, and they're just feel like they're an ATM machine or something, or they keep going
mm-hmm.
along. I've had men say that that's how you keep your wife happy.
Oh, the happy wife, happy life thing. Oh, make me crazy.
Having a good, being a good boy, like they mm-hmm. were a good son, and then they just find intimacy elsewhere. They get their needs met elsewhere. So
a moment ago, you were talking about a book that you'd written, and And I wanted to ask you, you're talking about ways about people developing self-esteem, and how could people develop better self-esteem and more autonomy, which actually, as you've said, and all the research shows, that the best relationships come from two healthy individual people who are intentionally creating a relationship. So how could people do better at this?
Well, that's a whole long subject. But,
that's a whole other show, right?
Yeah, I do have a blog on how self-esteem affects relationships, and research has shown that someone with low self-esteem, if you have low self-esteem, they can predict that the relationship won't last. And also, interestingly, if you're with someone with higher self-esteem, it can raise your self-esteem. So,
Makes sense.
The main thing is that you have to improve your relationship with yourself and not other esteem, what other people think, and being so afraid of other people's reaction.
Mm-hmm.
This is a huge symptom of low self-esteem, is a huge symptom of codependency, which is my favorite topic. And your relationship with yourself is the template for all your relationships. So people will treat you usually just a little better than you treat yourself. So if you are putting yourself down, and usually people are unconscious of how much they shoot on themselves and guilt themselves and push themselves and judge themselves, that's what you're going to usually get from the outside, or you're going to project it and assume that people are doing it when they're not. So the first step is just like working on your relationship with yourself and develop mindfulness. Write down your negative self-talk. I have an ebook, 10 Steps to Self-Esteem, and that's the first step. Every day or during the day, wear a rubber band every time you say, I should have done this, I shouldn't say that, call yourself a name. Just snap yourself. So I have YouTubes about it too. So.
And I love that you brought up the should, because I tell people that is my least favorite word in the English language. I should do this, I should do that. It's like, who's the great they that decided that this is the way everybody should be behaving? And that's not to say that we should, that there isn't a way of including the wants, needs, and desires of the people around us, but putting it in the framework of should, that's where guilt comes in, that's where, and of course a lot of this is what we pick up subconsciously in our families of origin. Sometimes it's not subconsciously, sometimes it's flat out right there in our faces, but a lot of times it's self-created, which means the good news is like you're talking about, we can uncreate it and recreate something else.
Well, if we self-esteem also is learned in our family of origin, and it can be learned and improved as we grow. So the worst thing to do is shit on your partner.
Yeah, and yourself, actually, too.
Well, that's where it starts, yeah.
So, Darlene, this has really been a very interesting conversation, and I want to let you have the opportunity to tell people where they can find all this information, the e-books, your regular books, so that they can start to improve this relationship with themselves, so that they can improve the relationship with other people.
Okay, well, there's links to everything on my website, which is whatiscodependency.com, and all my books, including Conquering Shame and Codependency, 8 Steps to Freeing the True You, and Codependency for Dummies. And my 7 e-books are all on my website. And, the paperbacks are on online booksellers.
Mm-hmm.
And the e-books are there also, and also on my website with links to my YouTube, my very active Facebook page is Codependency Recovery. And every day I post tweets and posts on Facebook and Google Plus on relationships and tips and how to build your self-esteem and be assertive, and all these things are all there.
Terrific.
If people sign up for my mailing list on my website, they'll get a free PDF on 14 tips for letting go.
That's really important.
Mention to your listeners that I also have not only this blog on my website, Trapped in an Unhappy Relationship, but another one that might interest people on this subject, which would be, should I leave or can I get the love I want?
Which is a really important question.
Yeah, it's how to ask in an effective way for what you want.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're, by the way, if any of your listeners are in a relationship with someone really difficult, an abuser, a narcissist, an addict, they would benefit from my very popular ebook, Dealing with a Narcissist, 8 Steps to Raise Your Self-Esteem and Set Limits with Difficult People.
Right.
And there's special scripts for asking what you want with someone who's highly defensive. So it's a little different,
mm-hmm.
and I go into the details, and you have to take a more educative approach rather than just sharing your feelings, because a narcissist really doesn't care about you.
Yeah, unfortunately not. But, yeah, so those are all great resources, and I highly encourage all of you listeners to go there and check it out, see what works for you, because most relationships don't start out unhappy. And the good news is they don't have to stay that way either. But understanding how you got there and learning what works to change that is the path to a happier, healthier one. And if you need help, get some. Because, as Dr. Phil says, love him or hate him, the only thing worse than being in a bad relationship for 5 years is to be in one for 5 years and one day. So one way is to keep listening to this show. And until next week, stay loving.